Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Cheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Shane Joseph. Each week at this time, we visit with an author, or sometimes an editor or a publisher from our region. We find out a little bit more about his or her life and what prompts him to write or publish, give him an opportunity to read some of his work for us, and this week we're very pleased to have Shane Joseph back again with us. Welcome, Shane.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Shane is a graduate of the Humber School for Writers in Toronto and studied under the mentorship of Giller Prize and Canadian Governor General's award-winning author David Adam Richards. Redemption in Paradise, his first novel, was published in 2004. Fringe Dwellers, his first collection of short stories, was released in 2008 and is now in its second edition. Shane's third work of fiction, After the Flood, was released in 2009 and won the Write Canada Award for Best Novel in the Futuristic Fantasy category in 2010. Paradise Revisited, a collection of short stories that continues to explore the immigrant experience, which he began with his novel The Ulysses Man in 2011, was shortlisted for the Relit Award in 2014. His latest novel, In the Shadow of the Conquistador, set partially in Peru, was released in the fall of 2015, and his collection of short stories, Crossing Limbo, was launched in June 2017. Shane is also the editor and part owner of Blue Denim Press, a literary press he founded with his wife Sarah Jacob in 2011. The co-owner of two travel agencies, he says that his traveling informs his writing. To date, he has visited 65 countries, one for each year of his life, with a few more to spare. You're a busy man, Shane.
Yes, that's for sure.
So I'm going to reverse that lot, and rather than talk about your books right now, I'm going to ask you about what's new at Blue Denim Press.
We did publish three books last year. One was, of course, the anthology, Hill Spirits 3.
That's right.
Which was, I think, very successful from my point of view. And we also did two other books. One was a collection of short stories, Hunting Muskie, which has been nominated for the Danuta Gleed Short Story Prize run by the Writers Union of Canada. And the other is the third in a detective series, called it the Beyond series, Sharon A. Crawford, and it's called Beyond Blood. And we've submitted that to the Arthur Ellis Award.
Now, when you look at a manuscript submitted to the press, what do you look for? What makes you choose a manuscript for publication?
Well, that's a very good question, a loaded one. First of all, it has to be well written. I need to be engaged with the book. I like books to be enlargements of life. I like to be taken out of a humdrum life into something that's believable, but somewhat extraordinary. And I think that's sometimes where most beginning writers fall down, is that they tend to want to stick to the tried and true. They want to stick to reality. And I keep saying to them, you're writing fiction. You have to exaggerate. You have to, as long as you don't make people into caricatures, but you have to exaggerate. You have to blow these things up. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I need to see. I also need to see a narrative that is escalating as it progresses. Many times, you know, you have a very good start. First one or two chapters have been, you know, probably submitted so many times, they're polished to the nth degree and they're good. And then the book falls down in the middle. Then it just peters out in the end. And so that's unfortunate. There has to be that narrative arc that escalates until there is that climax and perhaps a little bit of follow-through afterwards. But it has to keep me going. So that's one. And then on the other side, I also would like to work with a writer who will work with me. Because, you know, often when we write, we think that we have created the masterpiece that nobody should touch. But that is not true. A good editor can make your book better than you did yourself. So I'd like to have a writer who will work with me and partner with me, because in the end, I intend to make that book better for him or her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the misconceptions I know I found, because I'm an editor too, is that authors think that the editor is actually going to change the words, is going to rewrite the manuscript in some form or another, but that's not the way at all. An editor merely says, this piece is flat and needs fixing, or this character is an extra, I don't see the point of having him, or whatever. And then leaves it up to the author to rewrite.
Yeah, I don't try to change the author's voice. I have had situations where the author has taken 70% of what I've suggested, and 30% has been left. And I'm okay with that. But if it's the other way around, if they only take 30% of what I suggest and go with 70% of their own, then, you know, I think that that's they need somebody else.
Yeah. So it has to be a good fit between both of you.
Yeah, and I'm open to discussion because we debate some of the points between me and the writer. And sometimes, I missed his point. Mm-hmm. And when he makes the point, and I say, okay, if you can clarify that in the manuscript, then we're good to go.
And now to switch gears completely again. We said in the opening that you have, to date, visited 65 countries and that your traveling informs your writing. So tell us a bit about that.
I have written extensively about Sri Lanka, which is where I'm from. Well, two of the novels and one of the short stories is from there. I think I'm done now with that subject because I haven't lived in Sri Lanka now for over 30 years. And I don't know what's going on there. I'm not part of the scene. So I can't continue to get stuck in that time warp in the 60s and 70s to keep writing about it. So I've moved. I've written about Cuba. Lots of short stories about Cuba because I have traveled there with the Canada-Cuba Literary Alliance on several trips. And it's a great place to be inspired from because Cuba, to some extent, resembles Sri Lanka of the 1970s when there was a lot of shortages and there were lineups and, you know, nothing quite worked. And people, you still see them struggling and getting on with their lives. So I've written short stories about Cuba. One of my books, In the Shadow of the Conquistador, is partly set in Peru, which I have traveled to a couple of times. I have written a lot of travel logs, which have been published in a community newspaper down in Toronto. So places like Dubai, the Cayman Islands, the Czech Republic, Poland, Ireland, Sri Lanka, Cuba, of course, France, South Africa, Chile. And as I continue to go to these places, if they inspire me, I will write something about them. Traveling. I like writing about travel because it also enriches my traveling experience. It's not just something I went and came back and forgot about. I've put it down on paper so that I can visit it, 5 years from now and right. Say, oh, yes, that's what I did there.
Have you ever considered taking all those pieces and putting them into a book of travel stories?
I'd love to. I mean, I have a dream that one day I will come up with a title called Shane's Bob. Bob meaning best of blog. So I would take all my travel pieces from my blog and I would put them into, some kind of a little chapbook or something that will hopefully be a memento to leave behind for the rest of the family.
Well, Shane, you're working on several projects at the moment, which is unusual for you. Why do you like to have more than one developing at the same time?
Well, it's just that I write these things and then I leave them to gestate or marinate or whatever you call it. And then I go back to them and I revisit them and they get better every time I revisit them. So my novels take about 7 years on average to get published. I write them in about 5 months and then they go through these various drafts, sometimes as much as 7 drafts. So that's one problem. The other problem is I get bored when I'm working on something for too long. I leave it, and when I come back maybe 2 years later, I've got a totally different perspective on it.
Would you read something for us? What will you read for us
today?
Okay,
so I have the collection of short stories that's ready to go, and I'll take a piece from one of the stories. And this is about elder abuse. So we have an older couple who are close to their end of days, and their children who are in their middle age are anxious to see them gone so that they can get their hands on the inheritance.
Delightful.
It's something that happens quite often in our part of the world. And so I'm going to read the opening of that story.
Okay.
It's called Leverage. Harry and Sally were dying. The signs were everywhere. His heart had required a third stent recently, and the first one put in 5 years ago was now wearing down, causing him to be out of breath often and dizzy. He was sick of doctors attending to his plumbing all the time. She was getting more forgetful each day and had to be force-fed her memory pills, lest she become incoherent by sunset. Well, that was not such a big deal, Harry thought. After all, he was 91 and she was 89. They had met in high school, married in their early 20s after the war, pursued productive careers in government and education, produced children, and had been together since. Now she was his eyes and he was her brain. For in addition to his weak heart, he was going blind as she continued her slide into dementia. They still shared a drink after dinner in the home they had owned since they were married, watched TV, and took cautious walks indoors and sometimes outdoors in warmer weather with the aid of their walkers. They were hoping they could prolong this sunset for as long as possible, except that the phone jarred Harry awake from his lounge chair.
Don, what time is it?
He heard Sally's snores in the adjoining room. He must have fallen asleep, watching the late-night news on the monster TV in the living room. He heard the CBC morning show hosts laughing at some joke, and despite his proximity to the screen, the images were blurred. The phone's insistent ring was annoying.
Coming,
he said to himself, and reached for the cordless phone lying on the side table amidst pill bottles, the crumbs of last night's dinner plate, and the empty glass of pre-dinner sherry that was his only treat these days. His trembling fingers pressed the talk button, missed, and dismissed the call instead.
Ah, well, perhaps it was a telemarketer.
He switched off the TV and drifted back to sleep. Ring! He shot up in his chair, the instrument vibrating in his hand, making him think he was being electrocuted. This time, he hit the right button.
Dad? You awake?
Harry sighed.
I am now. What do you want?
He recognized his younger daughter, Megan. Megan, the planner, with a constant flow of designs for her parents' future that they didn't always buy into. The swimming pool when she was a teenager, the extra garage when she got her first car, the cottage by the lake when her kids were young enough to swim. Harry was tired of these plans that he always had to pay for, in cash or in kind. The nursing home called. They have a bed for Mom.
Oh, no, not again. She's sleeping.
We have to take the bed now, or else they will give it to someone else.
Well, then let him give it to someone else.
Dad, you can't keep looking after Mom, with your heart and your eyes and all.
I said when we go together. Do they have a bed for me beside her?
Dad, you know that is not how it works. There are separate men's and women's wings. But you can meet in the common areas.
No deal.
We cannot get you in the same place as Mom, at the same time. It's one bed at a time, whenever they come available. But they will place you on the priority list for the same home and have home care visit you at the house until you move.
Definitely no deal.
Her voice took on a plaintive note. Now she was going to appeal to his emotions.
Dad, why do you make it so difficult for Brad and me? We are doing our best for you. If you want to do your best, you can let us hang on to our independence for a bit longer.
He heard a clearing of the throat and a rustle of bedsheets in the next room. Then a faint voice called out, "Who's visiting?"
"No one. Go back to sleep. It's Megan calling too early."
The voice on the phone raised a notch. Megan didn't sound at all like her mother. Wonder whom she resembled.
"Dad, let me speak to Mom." "You can't. She just went back to sleep. Call me later."
He hit a button and hoped he had hit the right one. The phone went dead.
Oh, thank you, Shane. We've been speaking with Shane Joseph, author and publisher, and we'll speak to him again after we take this short break.